So I was having a conversation with one of our staff members about documentation, and he had come over from a in-network practice that he was working at, and he was talking about just how long it would take him to document and click through and the workflow and how just how time-consuming it was and how much easier it's been with the software that we use, which is PT Everywhere. And I know for us, we're very, very aware of sort of time leaks within our staff and our own schedules. And it's just one of the worst things you can do is just waste time on things when you could be doing them more efficiently. One thing for us is we have to document. It's something we need to do, and you need to do it as efficiently as you possibly can, because that's where you're going to save a lot of your time. You know, we were seeing our staff members save upwards of an hour a day as far as cleaning up his documentation, making it more efficient. What if you got an hour of your day back just from documentation? What if all of your staff did the same thing? Highly recommend you take a look at PT Everywhere. It's been a huge time saver for us and really has made a big difference in our efficiency of our practice. You can check them out at pteverywhere.com. I think you're going to really like what they have to offer.
So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast.
What's going on, guys? Dr. Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast, and today is another recast interview, one that I did with Jared Carter back in mid 2017. So this is going way back in the vault. These are the episodes you can't listen to right now because the first 250 are no longer available. We have a little over 500 episodes now, so you can really only listen to about half of the podcasts that we put out. And as we work on fixing that and making it to where you can listen to all of them, I wanted to reshare a couple of these. The ones that I really found very helpful and got a lot of feedback on back in the day when we first started this. And Jared is someone that I think, first of all, number one, he's just a really good person. He's somebody that I think has done a lot for the profession, and he's a family-oriented person. He wants to see physical therapy progress and grow, and I have a massive amount of respect for him, just as a clinician, but also just as a man and a father and a leader. So I was very excited to do this interview because the very first podcast that I was on was actually Jared's podcast. Right when I kind of got out of the military, and I had actually bought an ebook that he had on cash practices. And that was the first sort of like information that I ever gained and looked at. And definitely the very first investment I ever made in the business was this ebook that he had. And I'm not sure if he even has it anymore. I'm sure he has much more detailed things that are helpful. But, and the thing with Jared too, is like, we both work within this business consulting sort of cash practice realm. And I'm a huge, believer in abundance, and that you'll find the right person for you, and not everybody's the right fit for me. Not everybody's the right fit for Jared. But I refer business back, forth to him all the time. And I think this is how a relationship should be, and not necessarily this sort of competitive, cutthroat, talk bad about somebody else, even though they frankly are probably very similar to you. That's not how we should do things. And I'm excited to highlight him and what he's doing. I highly recommend you check him out. He has a great blog. He has a great podcast. And, this was an interview early for me. I was very excited for this one because he was actually someone that I considered one of my first mentors as far as, cash-based physical therapy is concerned. And if it wasn't for him and his ebook, I probably wouldn't have a practice, I just want to say, thanks to Jared for putting that out. I'm sure he's helped many other people besides myself. This was a really cool interview. You get to share his story and learn a little bit more about, him and what he's doing and why he kind of moved the direction where he was sharing some of this information, as well as, still having a practice in Austin. And I hope you enjoy this one. I know it's basically 5 years old, but it's funny how these concepts in business, they haven't changed much. They still apply. And he's someone that I think is definitely in the mastery level of understanding these. And you can learn a ton from him. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. And as always, guys, thanks so much for listening. And we'll catch you next week.
we'll right into it. Hey guys, Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. And today we've got one of the OGs, I'll just put it that way, of the cash PT practice scene. It's Dr. Jared Carter. And I'll give you a little plug to Jared Carter and his podcast and all of his online content. I say when I got out of the Army and I first was looking for how to establish like a clinic that I wanted to work in and felt like I would really enjoy, the number one resource I used was all of Jared's stuff. And his podcast wasn't out at the time, but it's awesome. If you haven't listened to his podcast, go listen to the cash-based physical therapy podcast. It has some really, really valuable content. And if you're in that stage where you're thinking about starting a practice or you're just in, you're trying to get some ideas and stuff, it's so valuable. So I'm really excited to chat with you today. So Jared, thanks for jumping on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate that very nice intro.
Oh yeah, I'm
glad my work could be of assistance and inspiration early on for you.
No, it was really helpful, and I love that. That model's out there because I think for you and I, we've been in this longer than I have, and we can get into this a little bit later. But it's scary when you think about starting something on your own. But even scarier when everybody tells you, no one's going to pay you cash, why would they just not use their insurance, right? So
right.
What you put out really helped me, gain a lot of confidence that would actually work.
I think that's been one of the biggest bonuses of my podcast is that I do monologues, but the majority of it really is interviews of others besides myself,
right,
who've had success in the model, including yourself. And that really is the inspiration that people get from it of seeing, oh, wow, this person's doing it, that person's doing it. It's not just one dude down in Austin or, just a handful of people. I mean, it's a growing thing and more and more people are trying it and having success in it. I'm not saying it's not hard and it's not a struggle to go into such a different model, but it really is a model that is viable and becoming more and more viable. And we can talk about why that is. But yeah, it's been a really cool ride to see all the people, practicing the way they want to practice and living, living their daily business life the way they want to live it, rather than, chasing reimbursement or having to see, 20 patients a day or, all the horror stories we're so familiar with.
Yeah. And, I put a Instagram post out the other day that was just like some like a branded, whatever, a little saying. And I basically said something to the effect of, it's sad how many physical therapists leave school and within a couple of years wish they'd pick something else. And it resonated more than I thought with people. I just had like tons and tons of comments of people just expressing how disgruntled they were with the fact that they had to see, so many people and that they didn't get to use their skill set in the way that they thought that they would. They didn't get to use all these manual skills that they worked so hard on gaining. They were basically just managing these big groups of people. And, how often do you get people reach out to you that are in that situation and just like looking for help?
All the time. And I'll tell you, this is kind of on topic, kind of off. At my website, I have probably over 100. Oh yeah, not probably. Actually, well over 100 blog posts. Whether it was in a written article or the show notes for a podcast, right? And consistently, every time I look at my Google Analytics, there's one blog post that is absolutely number one, gets far more traffic than any others. Maybe not far more, but definitely more. And it's titled "Is PT School Worth It?"
Yeah.
It's not even about the cash-based model. It was literally just a friend of mine who was like in his early 30s at the time was wondering like, hey, I really would like to be a physical therapist, but at this point in my life, I'm looking at the amount of debt I'll take on versus what I'm going to make, and I'm just not sure. And so I gave him my answer, and that's the article, the blog post itself. And then I opened it up to colleagues, and I fanned it out on social media. And that post has, like, I think over at the time of this recording, over 180 comments, if I remember. Maybe I'm thinking of the Medicare post, but it's like it's up there in the certainly over 100. And it's so interesting how some PTs are just so adamant about it being so worth it, and they love it so much. And yeah, it's a larger and larger debt load and blah blah blah. And then there's some people that are just like vehemently just like against it. No way I would do it again. And it's interesting to kind of read the different comments but it turns out that the search phrase, is PT school worth it, is a very popular one. And that comes up, you know, number one, since it's the exact title of that post. And so, you know, I don't know if that post has inspired many to do it or dissuaded. I'm not sure, you know, what it's actually done, but it's been interesting to see how much attention that topic gets and how many people do find themselves in a scenario where they're like, man, this sucks. I've got over 100K in debt and I hate my day to day. I like what I've learned and I would like to practice it in a certain way, but I can't. And so that's where, you know, practices like ours can be kind of a beacon of hope. And this kind of information can help guide people to really setting up a business where they really can enjoy being a physical therapist again.
It's also tough, the fact that certain other, health professional careers, whatever you want to call it, like in particular something like massage therapy, where practice acts can be very restricting for us, when in some states, you know, it's actually better to not have that, credentialing. I mean, it's so backwards to think of it that way. But, I've had people ask me the same question, you know, I think a lot of it depends on what their long-term goals are. But sure, in certain states, man, I mean, I know in Texas you guys have some limitations, but somebody could probably go see a massage therapist and not need anything.
It's unbelievable, and I'll try to keep this short. I'm obviously very...
Oh, you're obviously angry. I'd like to hear it.
I'm passionate about this. Texas being one of the last states where you can't initiate treatment. You know, we can evaluate this statements of every state has direct access pisses me off. That is such bullshit. That is absolute crap. We do not have direct access in Texas to start treatment. People can come in for an evaluation, but you know, most of the time when people come in, they want a taste of what you're going to give them. And to have to have that referral before we can actually touch them or even tell them a stretch, when they can go down the road and tell the massage therapist all about their pain and they're going to try and dig in with an elbow, or they can tell their personal trainer and they're going to try and give them exercises or even use their hands on them. Yep. You know, it's infuriating. And we, as a cash practice, most of our referrals are from non-physician sources. So probably 50% or more of the people that call saying, I'm ready to book, I want to see you guys for whatever reason, they don't have a referral. And then we got to take them through the process of trying to get one. And we lose thousands of dollars a year in my practice for that reason. So I'm actually looking into some different options. We're setting up relationships with concierge and fee for service physician practices now to send them in and quickly get the referral. But it's still another $50-$75+ and a trip for that person. It's still a hurdle that's just absolutely ridiculous. And you know, we only meet the legislature only meets twice a every other year. So we only get a shot at changing the law every other year, and we haven't even come close. It's a long process to get the law changed. We haven't even gotten it to a vote on either the Senate or floor yet. Wow. And you know, I mean, the TMA is just so powerful and so, so freaking rich, and they consider this a top priority to block every time. So I don't know if it's ever going to change. Obviously, we still are a successful cash-based practice, even with that huge hurdle. Sure. So in a way, I think that can also be an inspiration for others. If you're in a state where it's like, you know, not an issue, and you can get those direct access patients without the referral, that's huge. One kind of side note, I'm actually going to a telehealth conference in a month, specifically to meet with executives and CEOs of telehealth companies to explain, look, here's the situation. Do you want me and maybe a lot of my audience to send you a bunch of these consults, you know, for physical therapy referrals? Because this would be a huge business boost for anyone that agreed to it. And if we could just send someone a link and say, look, you know, book an appointment with this company. It's going to be, you know, whatever, $35, and they'll send us a referral if you're appropriate for physical therapy, of course. You know, so I'm hoping I can work something like that out. I don't know what the legalities of all of it are in terms of like telehealth legalities. I got to look into that, but I'm desperately searching for more and more solutions to lower that hurdle. But ultimately, I don't see the law changing for a long time here in Texas.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because a couple of years ago, before the Practice Act changed in Georgia, we didn't have this. We have better access now, direct access now, and I actually have a patient that owns a telemedicine company, and I brought the same thing up to him. This was right before it changed and didn't necessarily need it at that time. And it's interesting because they have like these little kiosks that they'll put in, you know, offices and stuff. And he felt like it could totally work. The issue sometimes comes down to, I don't know how Texas is, but sometimes the provider has to be in that state specifically. Right. So, you know, I don't know if Texas is like that, but if that was the case, then that would maybe complicate things where it would have to be a Texas-based provider or something. But I think it's a great way to get around it. And you know what? Sometimes the resistance of things makes us be creative, right? And instead of just giving up and getting frustrated and saying, you know, all right, hell with it, we're just not going to do it. If you can get creative and solve a problem, that can potentially turn into a whole other way to help other people and another, you know, offshoot of the business. You know what I'm saying? So
it's true.
I love it. I mean, I don't mind a problem. I think a problem is an opportunity to, if you can solve it, then you have option to have another business right there with it as well. So that's awesome that here you're going after that. I'd love to hear how you do
We'll see. Right, with legalities. And I know that, like, as far as I understand it, at the time of this recording, as a physical therapist, we could not provide telehealth services outside of our state of licensure. I'm not sure if MDs have the same exact limitation, mm-hmm. but so if that's the case, then I'll have to, you know, look at what providers could we connect with that are specifically in Texas. And I even thought about, well, what if I just started a telehealth business myself? And I'd have to partner. You have to partner with a physician because you can't employ physicians without being a physician or having a part of the company owned by a physician. But I've got some physician buddies that would potentially be open to it. So if I can't find it, we might have to create it, even though I don't think I have time for another business. But we'll see.
Add that to the plate.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Crazy. Well, you know, you bring this up, this idea of, you know, even like, you know, being creative and figuring out some of this, you know, telehealth stuff and ways to get around these just like silly limitations that are placed on us that we could probably just yell back and forth about for an hour. But, mm-hmm. you know, you have now had practice for a little over 7 years, and I'm interested to, you know, pick your brain a little bit on what do you feel the biggest changes or potential evolutions that you've seen within this cash model that have happened over this past 7 years?
The biggest changes in terms of the cash model, other than just the fact that more and more people are doing it and seeing, wow, this is possible and having success in it, actually, I would say occurred since the Affordable Care Act. Hmm. And so luckily for us, in the cash-based model or those interested in it, and something I mentioned earlier is that it's actually, I feel, has become easier for a cash practice to be successful because of the rise in deductibles and copays and just the general worsening of coverage for physical therapy. You know, these days with so many more people having these deductibles in the thousands of dollars that they haven't met, if we can do a good job as a cash practice in educating the public and those who are calling in and unsure that we're cash based and they're like, oh, well, I really need to use my insurance. It's like, wait, you know, let's just chat real quick. What kind of plan do you have in terms of your deductible? And if they have a high deductible, I would say, look, I would really encourage you, since you've shown interest in our model of our one-on-one sessions, manual therapy approach, I'd really encourage you to call your insurance and ask them how much out-of-pocket expense are you going to be paying until you meet that deductible. If you go somewhere, so if you go to a physical therapy practice that is in network with your insurance, because until they meet the deductible, in a lot of cases, I'd say most cases, you're going to have to pay 100% of the bill that the physical therapy practice is sending to the insurance. Sometimes they'll come back and give like a cash pay discount, you know, until they meet the deductible or whatever. But in general, that's what they're going to be told by the insurance company. And so it's like, okay, well, how much are those bills that are being sent to insurance companies from your standard PT clinic? Usually $200 or more, sometimes much more, especially if it's like in a hospital system or something. So, I mean, with that being the case, it's like, well, what kind of, going back to what you're saying to the patient, you can say, look, you know, I'm not dogging all other PT practices, but a lot of these practices, you need to ask if you're considering them, if they're in network, you need to ask how many patients an hour do they see per provider? Will I be seeing my physical therapist for the entirety of every visit? How long are those visits, et cetera? Because you might find that you're going to be in a gym style setting with five other patients at the same time, and an attack or an assistant is actually providing most of your care. And until you meet that $2,000 deductible, you might be paying $200 an hour for every one of those sessions, but you won't see those bills for 6 to 8 weeks. Yeah. You just get hit with a huge bill. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are the questions I'd love you to ask before you make that decision, because you might find that our $165 for an hour one-on-one with a doctor of physical therapy becomes actually cheaper than what you'd be paying otherwise. And then in the cases that of people that don't have high deductibles, or they met their deductible, I always encourage them to ask what the PT copay would be, because sometimes those are $50 to $75 nowadays. And when most of those traditional, you know, insurance-based practices are asking them to come in two or three times a week, and we usually see people on average just one time a week, it also becomes kind of a wash or not much difference in terms of the financial side of things. And then it's like, well, do you want to leave, you know, again, what kind of care do you want? And do you want to have to leave work three times a week versus one time a week,
right?
So those are the kinds of things that nowadays, in the last 3 years, as all these changes in, you know, the typical insurance plan has occurred, that we can utilize as cash-based practice owners, and our staff members can utilize when they're answering the phone. So that's a, that's, I would say, is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, transition or changes, shifts that I've seen in our model in the last few years.
Well, the questions you're you know, giving to them, those are so valid, because, you know, think about how many people have a bad experience, and then it's bad enough that they get kind of, you know, not a lot of attention. They have somebody go teach them how to do tricep press downs for lower back pain, even though they're plenty strong enough. Like, it's some stupid crap like that, right? And then they're in there with a bunch of other people, and they don't get better. But then it's worse than anything. You're right. Six, 8 weeks later, they get these bills that they owe, and there's no transparency. You know, I think that that is the biggest issue with the cash model. And I love that you bring all these things up, because they're so valuable. You know, you say $165, the people may hear that and they balk at it, but, you know, you're going to spend 10 minutes with your orthopedic surgeon and you're going to get a bill for $175. And so what does that equate to for nothing, really, that they're going to tell you that you have going on? So I think we're very valuable. And I think that what you're bringing up is huge. And the conversation has become so much easier. When you guys do that with your practice, do you tell them, say, hey, call your insurance? Or do you actively try to get in touch with their insurance for them and lay out, you know, hey, this is what you actually owe?
That's a great question. And so far at this point, just being, I have one practice manager and, you know, office administrator, or, you know, combo, right? Practice manager, office administrator. We're not making the attempt right now to verify benefits. But I do think that that will be something in the future that we will at least look at as a possibility, because if we can look at the overhead that it would take for someone to do that and actually bill on an out-of-network basis, or just verify benefits, if nothing else, that I think could probably be the tipping point for a lot of people that don't want to do it themselves and are just, you know, they're in the mindset of, oh, if I use my insurance, it'll certainly be cheaper, even though that's no longer the case in a lot of cases. So we don't do it now, but down the road, when we have enough PTs generating the revenue to justify it, then I might, you know, look at doing that.
Well, you bring up this kind of topic of staffing, you know, which is growing and scaling, and there's difficulties with that in its own right. And we kind of talked a little bit about this, you know, before we started recording. So where you're at now, the scaling of your business, like what is your biggest frustration that you've found with growing a team? And because you spent so long where it was, you know, just you and we're cruising, and actually, you know, it was like pretty easy gig. And now you're growing for a purpose, but there's growing pains associated with any growth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, biggest kind of frustrations, I would say, if you ask that of me or anyone doing similar things in terms of growing a practice, or but especially a cash-based practice, I'd say. Although I'm sure that this is a very similar deal with people who are doing traditional insurance-based practices, that my answer to that would probably have changed about every 6 months, you know, since I've started, which has been, it's been about a year and a half since I brought on my first PT, and then a few months after that brought on a full-time administrator. And I would say that my current answer to that is something that we did discuss right before this and this will be good for people to hear who are looking to go beyond, solo practitioner and scale things up. And I'd back up and just say, just for context, I was a solo practitioner for 5 years and on purpose. I probably could have started the growth, you know, and adding another therapist after about a year and a half or two. But I was actively, you know, working on my online business and kind of just seeing patients 4 days a week. After that first year and a half or so, really didn't have to do much in the way of networking or marketing at all. It was just, you know, being a solo practitioner, if you get great results and you give people a great experience, it doesn't take, in a lot of cases, if you do the right things, it doesn't take a crazy amount of time before word of mouth can kind of keep you afloat. So I wasn't having to do much other than just show up and see patients. And then I worked on my other businesses on the side, and it was a nice cruising kind of thing, like you said. And I was after the low overhead was paid out and whatnot, I was, you know, I was reporting, I had a 6-figure income. And so then when I decided, okay, look, my hands aren't going to take this my whole life. I also don't want to have to be at the clinic, you know, 5 days a week or 4 days a week. And I really would like to scale this thing and create a very self-sustaining business with minimal input from me. It's like, it's not just about getting that next therapist. It's now I've got another therapist. Now I'm having to, on the admin side, deal with, you know, so much more, and I can't really field all these calls. Okay, I have to have now a full-time practice manager, administrator, receptionist type person. And then, so now you're going from a small space, even maybe doing home visits, if that's your model, to needing a much bigger space, to needing a lot more supplies, to needing, you know, a bigger waiting room, space for the receptionist, you know, all these things that your overhead in going from one to two therapists is probably going to do way more than just double.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, there's the whole conversation that maybe we won't get into now about how you're going to pay that therapist. Are you going to have them on a set salary and be potentially losing money as you try to grow their schedule? Are you going to pay them kind of a commission basis, which is a little safer up front, but harder to scale long term?
Sure.
And really get buy-in of, you know, this is a person working for this practice, not having their own practice within this practice, right? So that's something to really be aware of, if for those out there that are thinking about scaling, is that your overhead is going to immediately go up way more than double when you bring someone on, and you're really going to need to bring two people on. And in my experience, I'm really glad and lucky that I had, you know, started this online business, because it's allowed me to kind of live on that and not have to take a salary myself, or, you know, just pay myself minimally as needed along the way in the last year and a half, and not crap my pants because I'm not making anything.
Yeah.
But for them, you know, really, I've run the numbers, and it's not until I get another PT who and have their schedule, you know, pretty decently busy, am I going to be able to like pay myself what I would consider, you know, a decent PT salary again? And that's just the nature of the numbers, and it's something to be aware of. And it's not something I really knew of ahead of time. And so thank goodness I had, you know, other sources of income, because it would have been really tight along the way otherwise. So I'd say that has been a big surprise and frustration along the way, and something that hopefully others can plan for better than I did.
Well, it's important for people to hear this stuff, because and I think all too often we talk about all the positives that come along with entrepreneurship and being a business owner and the flexibility and, you know, all the cool things that come along with it. But, you know, what isn't cool is losing money every month, you know, I've been there too, where, you know, we're in growth cycles and things are going the opposite direction, and you're like, doing the math and you're thinking, okay, I got like 3 months and you know what, it's scary, but you do those things because you have to, in order to build something where it's sustainable without you there. And you're right. Like, especially someone that's as heavy hands-on as you are, you know, it's, do you want to be doing that when you're 50 years old, you know, and seeing that many people and being tied down to a schedule? And, right. And people love that stuff. Don't get me wrong. I really enjoy physical therapy, but yeah, you have to make that decision, man. Do you want to stay in that kind of lifestyle business, or do you want to kind of grow and scale? And that kind of brings me to my next question, which is really, how scalable do you think these practices are? Because I think as of recent, we've shown we can definitely scale to multiple providers. But I look at some of these big, you know, 10, 20, 30, 100 plus clinic conglomerates that are insurance based. And I don't know if the scalability is there for cash practices, but potentially maybe it is. I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a situation that changes over time, because I don't foresee the insurance based model becoming or remaining a sustainable option for a growing number of types of practices out there. Basically, anyone who's not in a large practice like you just described, or a hospital system that really has the bargaining power, or a scenario where they can maintain decent enough reimbursement rates, they're going to keep getting squeezed, and more and more practices are either going to have to create some sort of cash-based revenue, whether it's through PT treatment or not, to survive, or they're going to have to sell or close or whatever. And so I think that what's going to happen over time is we're going to see a larger and larger number of people that are literally forced to be at least a hybrid cash-based practice, and a larger and larger amount of insurance plans that provide little or no coverage for physical therapy. I think we're going to see huge cuts in what physical therapy, in terms of physical therapy coverage for Medicare. I'll just to give a spiel on that. I mean, as you know, I've done a ton of research on the cash-based business model and Medicare, and in the process have really looked at the stats, and the amount of people drawing off of Medicare is going to double over the next, I think it's 20 years. And that means the amount of people paying into Social Security and Medicare is going to drastically decrease per capita. So that we end up with I think it's going to be like 2.1 people paying into the systems for every one drawing out. Whereas back in like 1960, there were 4 people paying into the system for every one drawing out. Wow. So there's this really, really scary shift in the demographics and people of those systems that literally make it mathematically impossible for there to not be major changes to what Medicare pays out of their banks. You know, I mean, and the biggest payouts from Medicare are to providers for services. That's the biggest ones. So all providers and all of our services are going to be on the chopping block. Who do you think is going to get cut first? Is it going to be things like physical therapy, or is it going to be things like, surgeries and medications that actually keep people alive? Sure. Not to say that we don't have an incredibly valuable service, but guess what's going to happen? So it hadn't happened yet. To a large degree, they've, in most billing units, they've at least kept up with inflation. Actually, not much more than that, though. In fact, I think they pretty much just track inflation, and some of them have not even kept up with inflation in terms of like a manual therapy code or a Therex or whatever. At some point, as this huge shift in the population and this huge change in what's being taken out versus put in happens, we're going to see some major changes. And I foresee that 20 years from now, physical therapy is going to be much more of a, look, if you need physical therapy, you're paying out of pocket for it. I don't care if you're in Medicare or you're, you know, you have a private insurance, you're going to be paying a lot of what is spent out of your own pocket. Maybe some coverage still remains. I think there'll be some coverage, but I think that it's going to get really, really crappy for how much our services are covered. And so what I think is going to happen is that we're going to end up being one of those services. It's kind of seen like, not in terms of what's provided, but in terms of what you pay for it out of pocket. We're going to be kind of like massage therapy and personal training are. It's like no one expects sometimes those things are covered by insurance in a rare case, right? But in general, people know that if you're going to go get a massage, you're paying cash. You know, if you're going to use a personal trainer, you're paying cash. And I think that that's going to become more of a publicly acknowledged just kind of mindset that physical therapy is something that you mostly pay cash for. Maybe there's some coverage, but not a ton. And so at that point, the scalability of the practices, kind of like I described earlier, with just the changes we've seen in the last few years, it's going to become easier because more and more of the general population are going to have that mentality of, okay, look, this is just something we pay cash for. But could it scale to, you know, 100 clinic practices? I don't know about that. I mean, that's a huge, huge operation. But I could certainly see, cash-based practices and people who are really business savvy and really pushing hard, going 10 plus clinics. Yeah, I could see that. I wouldn't expect that anytime real soon, but I do think eventually it could get there.
Well, I almost feel like it would be better. Let's say your, prediction is 100% accurate, right? And it sounds like it potentially is going to be that way, and which is good for us, maybe not necessarily so good for insurance-based practices, but what I look at is the idea of massage therapy, personal training, and the amount of questioning and just this, the amount that you have to inform people about yourself to get them in is totally different. You know, and not only that, but I know people that pay over $1,000 a month for personal training every month, mm-hmm. and have done that for years and years. And I look at it and I think, man, we undervalue ourselves significantly. I used to be a personal trainer. I mean, I did that when I was in college, and I was a butthead 20-year-old kid working at this golf retirement community selling $5,000 personal training packages for like 6 months of me telling them how to do bicep curls, you know? And so, I mean, what people value is totally different. I think it's it's a disadvantage to us. The fact that people assume it's 100% covered by insurance, and it sounds like it would be better if it did go the other way around. But, you know, that being said, like, okay, let's say that this happens. People right now are these cash practices. Do you think it's better for them to niche down and try to become really well-known, really kind of sought after for a very specific area? Or do you feel with these changes, is it something where you can get these kind of generalists in terms of orthopedic issues and still have success in the practice?
It's a good question. Let me also preface it with I hope that I'm wrong. I think it's still going to be possible for people to have success in both models. And I really hope, just for the general public, that our services and for you know, our profession, that our services are always covered nicely by insurances and Medicare. I really hope that. I don't really see it mathematically happening, but I hope I'm wrong. But to answer your question, niche down or go broad? Well, I think that depends on each individual practice owner's aim, you know, and what they want their day-to-day to look like. And if you have an aim of being a 10 clinic practice, if you're going to niche down, I mean, I'm always a big fan of really going strong in a niche or in maybe more than one niche. I don't think that it's certainly not impossible to do, you know, have multiple niches that you're really well known in. So I'm a big fan of that. It really does help, I think, especially in the beginning, if you can really establish yourself as like the go-to providers for XYZ, you know, CrossFit or for runners or for golfers or whatever. If you want to go big, then you have to consider, you know, how big is the niche or, you know, potential market that you want to target, you know. And if you want to go really big, you probably are going to need multiple niches over time that you develop, which is possible, or you're going to need to be the generalist. I mean, we are kind of, right now, I'd say we're generalist, you know, manual therapy specific providers. We treat things from head to toe, and then we have a sub niche focus with runners right now. And as I hire more people in the future, if I get someone who's an amazing CrossFitter and great therapist and has, you know, inroads in those communities, then I might consider, you know, going after that niche, or, you know, XYZ, you know, specialty that someone comes in, you know, vestibular or whatever, you know, it could be so many things. I would consider creating multiple niches in order to grow. But the thing you have to be careful about there is that if you're building niches and putting a ton of energy and marketing efforts and money into that niche, you don't want it to be something that only one practitioner who could leave at any time to be skilled in, right? So you have to kind of think long term and understand that, yeah, people are going to come and go for various reasons. You might have to let some go, and you don't want to build a niche specifically over, you know, around one person. So like Ben, my PT now, he's great with runners, and that's what he's, you know, one of the things he's really passionate about treating. So I was like, all right, let's do it. Let's build out a running niche. And we've been working on that. But whoever I hire in the future, even if they bring, you know, a specialization in something else, they're going to know, you know, how to be a badass with runners, you know? Yeah. And so I will make sure that any niches that we introduce, everyone is going to be able to utilize or to you know, service those patients at a high, high level.
Well, I want to shift gears a little bit and get into one thing I want to talk to you about, which is entrepreneurship and not necessarily just patient volume and physical therapy practice, you know, volume, which is obviously a big part of what you and I both do. But when we look at the potential opportunities for physical therapists to build businesses, and you know, you and I both do things online as well. There's opportunities there besides patient care for physical therapists to be able to utilize their knowledge, their skill set, and leverage it into other types of entrepreneurial kind of ventures. Where do you see, or maybe like one or two potential areas where PTs can build a business and generate revenue in particular that's sustainable at what their salary is, if not more, as a PT, that is not necessarily just patient care?
Oh man, that's a fun topic. And there are so many possibilities in that realm. You know, I'll just building off of the niche conversation, just creating a monthly membership, kind of group or community, you know, that is based on that niche. So let's like use your, you know, your niche in CrossFit as an example. Now, obviously, Kelly Starrett already has Mobility Y, but that doesn't mean that, you know, someone out there couldn't have in their own community, between the patients they see and their friends in the CrossFit communities, you know, a $10 a month private Facebook group where, you know, every week you provide XYZ information, whether it's a written article or a new video or whatever, and other people can share. And the Facebook group has certain rules to make sure that people stay engaged and actually comment and you know, bring up questions. And you could have, you know, you could have weekly group calls, you could have weekly group meetups. So these are all things that would be an extra additional an additional revenue generator that is technically an online thing, but it's very mixed and also can feed your offline brick and mortar business. You know, yeah. You could have people that join that group, love it, and then they get hurt at some point. And who are they going to go see? Of course, right? I mean, most likely. So you could set up those types of online services that are both fed by your patients as well as feed your PT practice. So that would be one example. Another great example, one of the people on my podcast, Sarah King, Graffelman. I can't remember which. No, she's married. I can't remember which. Sorry, Sarah, if you're listening to this, but she has done such a cool job. She's focused on working with Parkinson's patients. Now, here in Austin, she has a home-based visit business. She goes to people's homes, and she also does small group, sessions with groups of Parkinson's patients in different areas. But she has this awesome online business where she is providing digital, you know, content, whether it's video or written, to people all around the world with Parkinson's. And, you know, she has courses and, you know, different things that people can sign up for and monthly memberships. And it's freaking awesome. Yeah. So I've not asked her. I don't know what kind of revenue she does on that, but she is really, you know, at least from the outside looking in, her style and the content she produces, her emails, it's like really impressive stuff. And again, it's like people will find her in Austin because they found that online, you know, membership first. And then they're like, oh my God, she's an awesome. I'm going to use her here. We're going to do one-on-one sessions. So you've got a lot of examples of ways that you could do that. Like for us, one thing that we're probably going to do once we kind of get through a little bit more growth and kind of systemization of things is to have, you know, an online running community where Ben mostly and any future PTs, they're providing like weekly videos and calls and, you know, feedback to the members of our running group. And, you know, if those people are here in Austin, of course, they can come see us for treatment if they're dealing with different issues. We partner. One thing to kind of keep in mind with this is if like, if you're wanting to kind of create something that is very similar to groups that you already partner with or sponsor, like running groups in our case, you kind of have to be careful there about what you're providing. So like we may provide for those who aren't part of a run group already, we might provide training plans, you know, as part of the service. But then some people who are already part of the running groups that we sponsor, they've already got their training plans, but we're providing, say, you know, a weekly mobility or weekly strengthening for runners, kind of new homework assignment, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, you can get really creative with it, but those are just just a few examples of what you could do. And you could do that in pretty much any niche that you're in, is just, you know, creating an online community that people pay to be a part of, and then providing them regular, really useful, helpful content.
Yeah, I love that. It's the audience curation, right? If you can develop an audience, we all have an audience as physical therapists. We've all worked with people and got to spend a lot of time with them that can be valuable, you know? So I love that. I love that people and our PTs, I should say, can look at ways outside of just patient care to really not just drive their business, but also create an additional revenue stream for themselves. So Jared, this was an awesome conversation, man. I want to give you an opportunity to let people know where they can find out more about you, where they can reach out to you if they have questions, you know, just get in touch with you online before we get done with the call.
Yeah, sure. So since those listening are obviously podcast listeners, you can find my podcast if you just search for the Cash-Based Practice Podcast, if you're interested in that model. Or, you know, we kind of delve outside of that model too, with a lot of just entrepreneurial type conversations. And then if you'd like to check out more information, or, you know, check out the books I've written, you can go to drjaredcarter.com and find everything there. Social media, you know, just do the same search, and I'm kind of in a lot of places. So yeah, connect with me. It'll be fun.
Yeah, this is great. And I will say, you know, there's plenty of people that are busy, and Jared's definitely one of them. And I know in the past, you know, before I was ever on your podcast, before, you know, you were on mine, or we had, you know, developed a friendship, you would reach out and you would, you know, get back to people. And I think that's just so awesome. I try to do the same thing with everybody as well. So yeah, it's definitely, you know, you hear people say like, reach out, and then nothing. But I can tell you for sure, Jared, somebody's going to get back to you. So reach out to me if you got a question. Guys, thanks so much for joining us today on the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Hey, Peach Entrepreneurs, we have big, exciting news, a new program that we just came out with that is our PT Biz part-time to full-time five-day challenge. Over the course of 5 days, we get you crystal clear on exactly how much money you need to replace by getting you ultra clear on how much you're actually spending. We get you crystal clear on the number of people you're going to need to see and the average visit rate you're going to need to have in order to replace your income to be able to go full-time. We go through three different strategies that you can take to go from part-time to full-time, and you can pick the one that's the best for you based on your current situation. Then we share with you the sales and marketing systems that we use within our mastermind that you need to have as well if you want to go full-time in your own practice. And then finally, we help you create a one-page business plan. That's right, not these 15-day business plans. You want to take the Small Business Association, a one-day business plan that's going to help you get very clear on exactly what you need to do and when you're going to do it to take action. If you're interested in signing up for this challenge, it's totally free. Head to physicaltherapybiz.com/challenge. Get signed up there. Please enjoy. We put a lot of energy into this. It's totally free. It's something I think is going to help you tremendously as long as you're willing to do the work. If you're doing the work, you're getting information put down and getting yourself ready to take action in a very organized way, you will have success, which is what we want. So head to physicaltherapybiz.com/challenge and get signed up today. Hey, real quick before you go, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and I would love it if you got involved in the conversation. So this is a one-way channel. I'd love to hear back from you. I'd love to get you into the group that we have formed on Facebook. Our PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group has about 4,000 clinicians in there that are literally changing the face of our profession. I'd love for you to join the conversation, get connected with other clinicians all over the country. I do live trainings in there with Eve Gigi every single week, and we share resources that we don't share anywhere else outside of that group. So if you're serious about being a PT entrepreneur, a clinical rainmaker, head to that group, get signed up, go to facebook.com/groups/PT entrepreneur, or go to Facebook and just search for PT entrepreneur. And we're going to be the only group that pops up under that name.